We arrive here today to debate at social distances from each other.
There's no doubt that the old politics of the two-party system is now gone and over.
I don't need lectures from you or anybody on the Sinn Féin side of the house.
We're very reluctant to kind of say what's red lines, but we do have to take climate seriously.
There's going to be constant criticism, there's going to be a lot of disappointment, and whoever goes into government is going to be unpopular. Okay.
Hello and you're very welcome to your politics podcast from RT News. I'm Paul Cunningham. We're going to be joined by our special political guest, Louise O'Reilly of Sinn Féin presently, but Micheál Lehan, RT's political correspondent, is here with me now. Micheál, could you say basically that the Irish government is a bit like Willy Wonka? They've got a golden ticket and they have to get these tickets to people, because even people don't want to use the ticket, they probably want to get the golden ticket anyway.
Yeah, Willy Wonka and the lengths people went to get those tickets.
Exactly. How many chocolate bars did you have to buy?
That's it. And just how far will publicans and restaurant owners, I suppose, be willing to go in enforcing this and enforcing these changes, and that kind of where those negotiations are at the moment.
Yeah.
What level of risk will they carry it, and those key questions around enforcement.
Deal with the first one. I mean, I think it's still a little bit odd. Let's put it this way. In political terms, like, getting these EU digital COVID certificates was something we knew that was going to happen. And certainly it was an opportunity for a government to be able to come to the public and give them something tangible, saying, even though it's something small, saying, I know this is important, I'm going to give it to you. And yet we've had it already announced. We're 12 days away from the 19th of the return of non-essential travel. And yet we still can't say how many people, what percentage of people who are vaccinated are going to get them, by what time. We still don't have a call centre that's open. It just seems a bit weird, really.
Yeah, it does. And I suppose that kind of move away from where you had a point where people would be fined for leaving the country, up to this moment, yeah, on the 19th, where people can travel and are being helped, really, and those quarantine restrictions around them drop away. Interesting too, I suppose, that Oisín Smith this morning saying that you can still go even if you don't get that cert, if you have proof of vaccination, or even if you get a test. And
so we don't need it at all.
But potentially even take the test at the airport, I suppose, which probably is a relief to some people, but at the same time kind of adds to that level of confusion as to what really is this digital cert about. And I suppose it's to make travel more seamless, really, ultimately, isn't that what it's about?
So you flash it and then the gate opens and through you go, rather than having to hang around, dig into the bottom of your bag and find that crumpled piece of paper and be able to say, look, I am vaccinated.
Yeah, but there is something in the fact that government does seem to have taken their time to get to this point. And even what number will people be able to ring? When will that phone line be up and running, I suppose, for those people? That's particularly relevant to those who've recovered from COVID and trying to get that information.
Yeah, or indeed maybe someone who got vaccinated in hospital, so they're not in a GP or pharmacy, which means they'd be getting a letter, and they didn't come through the HSE portal, which means an email. So they're, you know, waiting, suspended in some ways until that phone line comes up and running. And then you've got this double value of it, as you said, the possibility with the negotiations going on between restaurateurs and publicans that EU digital COVID certificate could also get you a table for four in a restaurant.
And it looks
inside.
It looks that way, doesn't it? Even though that's not confirmed, but it does seem to be that the outline of that deal that's beginning to take shape, it seems, will be based on the digital cert rather than going about it any other way. That seems the obvious way, even if there were initial concerns about could you translate all that data across.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way it sounds, you're going to present your cert, but maybe also have to show a driving license so you didn't just knock it off from your brother and head down to the pub.
Yeah, and I suppose it does give pubs that have been, even some of them who've been shut since March of last year, that possibility to open. Is that the tangible effect of the thing that might make it enticing, even if there was political opposition to it, expressed fairly vociferously at certain parliamentary party meetings last week, that idea that you would have to show proof of vaccination?
I mean, I was talking to a restaurateur during the week, and they were saying that the big thing for them, that this time of all times, it has to be certain. They can't have another date, have bought in all their food if you're a restaurant, and then have to chuck it in the bin and rack up losses and then try and seek some remuneration back from the government on the basis of them having closed it down. I mean, they're just literally saying, whatever day it is, this has to stick.
Yeah, and you do feel that after cabinet next week, you get that date, whether that's the 19th or possibly after the 19th, and that you have legislation as well to underpin this new system.
Yeah.
As that does seem that that's the way things are going to proceed now.
And if you were a betting, last question, if you were a betting man, which we have some indications that you might be, if you were a betting man, is it going to open up on the 19th or 26th, especially given Micheál Martin this afternoon said, yes, legislation is going to be required just to make sure that no bar or restaurant is going to be sued for discriminating against customers by saying you're vaccinated, so you get in, and you're not vaccinated, so you can take a hike.
Every week that goes by, more people get vaccinated. I suppose if there is that possibility, you feel from a government point of view of holding it out perhaps until the 26th, does that make it easier? Although Micheál Martin saying too that NPHET really won't have the final say on this because essentially government are implementing what NPHET asked them to do anyway, aren't they? Yeah. So it's probably not that courageous a step. The government can announce that. But I think so.
Yeah.
Well, I would think the 26 possibly, given that caution has at every point really been the guiding principle.
There you have it. His reputation is on the line. Micheál Lehane is calling it for the 26th.
Before you go, Micheál Martin and the keepy uppies outside government buildings.
I was very impressed.
You said silky, but he got five, was it?
Well, that was third attempt.
Quite Patsy Frayne, was it?
He was particularly good on the first one. And then we all sort of,
all right,
the press corps moved over to take more close-ups, but he wasn't able to replicate it.
What does Giles say? Any player is good at giving time and space.
That's unfair. You're going to do it. Take out the camera and see how you get on. Let's call in our political guest this week. It is Louise O'Reilly of Sinn Féin. How are you, Louise?
How are you? Nice to be here.
Fantastic to have you. What do you make of this digital cert? When you're talking to people, are they talking about it? Is it something they care about, or is it something they're just going, sure, I've given up on the idea of foreign travel. I couldn't give a monkey's.
No, well, I represent the constituency that has Dublin Airport in it. So there's 140,000 workers who are dependent on aviation reopening sustainably and reopening safely. So it is a massive topic of conversation. I know from talking to my neighbours and indeed people in my own community, it's absolutely huge. Of course, the fear is that the government aren't organised. We know that every other country in the European Union has moved ahead. They're pressing ahead with this. We seem to be picking up the slack and coming along behind, as is often the case. I don't think any of the pronouncements I've heard from Minister Ossian Smith would fill me with any confidence, and that's been honest. I know from talking to people in aviation, they don't believe that Eamon Ryan is committed at all to salvaging the aviation sector. But we do know that, you know, we can't afford to let not just the jobs but the connectivity go. So the digital cert is absolutely essential. It's an essential part of it. It's something that Sinn Féin have called for the government to take action on. And it does seem that other countries in the European Union have gone ahead of us on this. That's regrettable. But I think we have the capacity to catch up. And I think that that does need to be done. I think people see that the digital cert, even if they don't want to use it, but they see it as maybe being symbolic of us moving to the next phase of this pandemic. And I think that's very much on the radar for a lot of people. But as I've said, in my own area, it's the jobs and the connectivity. And talking to business people, they will tell you the importance of the connectivity. I mean, we lost a route after Fianna Fáil crashed our economy. We lost one of the main routes to the US, and it took 8 years to get that route back. So we really do need action from the government and confidence to know that the digital cert, when it comes, that it will be workable.
Yeah, I mean, action. They're saying action is coming. On Monday, all those digital certs are going to start to fly. And one would imagine that if it's the case, if we just take the substantial number of people who went onto the HSE portal and to do so, to get their vaccination, had to give an email, that stuff should be flying fairly quickly. Would that not give you some confidence that, you know, we're going to, you know, have a hell of a lot of people with their certs by the end of next week?
Well, I would base my confidence in the government on their performance, and we know that they've been back and forth on this. We also know that they are behind, but notwithstanding that, it is very welcome if this vaccine, if this passport, the certificate is on its way. We'll wait to see how fast it is rolled out. I think the fact that we don't have the call centre number yet, and that was promised, that should be a relatively simple thing to set up, and yet it seems that they have failed to do that. So as ever is the case with this government, talk is cheap, but we will check against delivery.
Yeah, I mean, I think we did get not quite a confirmation, but a promise that the number and the call centre will be operating from next week before the 19th, but we didn't quite get a date. So I think you're probably right on that people will be wondering, well, when and why don't we know already? But just on the broader issue, because this digital cert, this golden ticket, isn't just going to give you the capacity to travel if you chose, but it also maybe is going to give you the chance to go indoors and have a meal or a couple of pints or whatever. I mean, what's your sense? You know those talks are ongoing. What's your gut feeling on it?
Well, I tell you what's very absent from those talks, and I welcomed them. I absolutely did. I had pressed the Tánaiste to engage directly with the tourism and hospitality sector, but the voice of workers is not there. Now, I mean, nobody is going to expect Leo Varadkar to stand up for workers' rights, or indeed any of his partners in government. So we know
he
that
he would say he would.
Well, indeed, I'm sure he'd say a lot if he was given the time and space to do it. But again, you know, we will check against delivery, and that's been lacking. We know that workers don't have a voice at the table. So I want this passport system to be able to work. I really, really do. And it has to work not just to protect customers, it has to work to protect the workers. So we have the situation whereby a young worker working in the hospitality sector is in a position to serve the people indoors who are double vaccinated and who have the cert, but he or she at the finish of their shift may not be able to sit down and have a pint or have a sandwich in the same place that they've just been working. So this is something that needs to be worked out. But without representation for workers at the table, it's not going to be, I don't believe it's going to be done effectively. So I do think that we need to see a very high level involvement from the ICTU to represent the views of workers and to ensure that, you know, that this works. Because like, we all want it to work. I'm no different to anybody else. I want to be able to have a meal indoors. I want to be able to go out and have a pint, the same as everybody. Yeah. And so say all of us. You know, we all want to be able to do it, but it has to work for everyone. So it's got to work for the customers, it's got to work for the business owners, and it's got to work for the people who are working in these establishments. But I think that's possible. I really do think that's possible.
Would you think, Louise, that when it comes to something like that secondary point you're making, which was that younger people who may be working in hospitality and serving, not able to avail of hospitality, which when you just see it first, it strikes you as just basically wrong, that there's something strange going on there. But yet you take a step back, we have for the past number of months had this vaccination process which is operated on the basis of age. It's rapidly working its way into the 20s. Indeed, the entire adult population is going to be vaccinated, we think, according to the high level task force on vaccine rollout, possibly by the end of next month. So it may be an anomaly, but it's only for a short period of time.
And that's the hope. But it is an anomaly, and it does need to be dealt with, because it isn't fair to say to, you know, a 20-year-old person who's waiting tables, look at you, you know, you can wait the tables in here, you can be in the kitchen collecting the food, mixing with people who are vaccinated, non-vaccinated, but at the end of the shift, you can't sit down. So I think, look, at the restaurant owners and the government have recognised this. It's possible to put a system in place, I believe, either via antigen testing or PCR testing or regular and routine testing. I mean, look, at they've piloted antigen testing in meat factories. So the government already have. They talk as if they're about to start their antigen piloting now, but of course they've been doing this in the meat industry for a while now. So they have a body of evidence on how workplaces can function. They have return to work protocols. I think they need to be adapted for the tourism and hospitality sector. But the important thing is people want to get back to work. You know, people are very, very anxious to get back to work. There's 180,000 jobs dependent on them getting back to work. But also this is a key time. You know, every week that's lost in the summer is worth 4 weeks of the winter. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like it has to happen. And I think that there is finally now recognition on the part of the government that it is going to require some action on their part. But I wish they would just take the learning from the meat factories where they have been doing and using antigen testing, instead of just, well, you know, is there anything to be said for another report, another task force or another working group? I think maybe there's a lot of evidence out there that needs to be considered. I'm not saying it's necessarily a panacea, but it should be part of it. But as I've said, it has to work. The reopening has to work for the business owners, for the customers and for the workers who are going to be serving us our pints and hopefully and our meals indoors very shortly.
Is your name, your middle name, Louise Boris O'Reilly, in which you're saying, let's just get stuck in, let's open it up, let's do antigen testing, let's do it all and let's do it now?
My middle name is Margaret. But no, that's not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying it has to be safe and it has to work. Boris Johnson is saying, I don't care if it's safe, let's just do it. And that there, we couldn't be further apart in so many ways, yeah. Paul, as you know. But no, I am very much not Louise Boris anything. I think it's, you know, it's important that it's done because, the you know, time is moving on. And as you've said yourself, the vaccine programme is going to catch up.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it is a case of just putting in place measures that will keep everybody safe. So that's my focus, is ensuring customers are safe, business can trade and workers can go to work safely. That's what we need to see happening. And I think that is very much possible. It's very much the opposite of what's happening with our nearest neighbours, I think, because safety has to come first, but it's possible to do it safely, you know. And as you've said, it's that kind of interregnum time in between, you know, while we're waiting on younger people to be vaccinated. But that's important that we deal with that as well right now.
Well, my sort of focus all of this week has been really on the EU COVID certs and focusing on that question of hospitality and travel. There was a substantial intervention in the Dáil when it came to the Dáil assessing gender-based violence, and it came from the Minister of State, Josepha Madigan, the Dublin Rathdown TD, and it was something unexpected. It was something she wanted to say to the Dáil herself. I'm going to get your reaction to it, Louise, in a second, but just here's a short flavour of what she had to say.
There are very few women my age who have not been subjected to some form of sexual assault in their respective lifetimes. And I know this because I'm one of them. It won't come as a surprise to those of us of a similar age who have suffered this trauma. And sometimes we have suffered it more than once. It was and is a lot more common than many believe. And I always take statistics that I read with a pinch of salt.
I mean, on the one hand, Louise O'Reilly, that was like a shocking thing to say. And yet what Josepha Madigan was saying to the audience, not just to the Dáil, but to the nation, was it actually isn't shocking at all because it's just so common.
I'm a 47-year-old woman. I was in the chamber when she said it. It didn't shock me at all. I think it was a very welcome intervention on the part of the junior minister, and I think it was a brave thing for her to do. But the simple fact is, if you've managed to if you've lived as long as I have and you've been around as long, yes, you have. There isn't. I don't think I know a woman who hasn't been subjected to some form of sexual assault. And there is, I think, a huge amount of underreporting. And I think it was interesting that the minister highlighted that. I think, you know, we also need to remember that we have an issue whereby 999 calls were not being answered, particularly in relation to domestic abuse. And again, you know, that's something that the government need to tackle head on. That needs to be done. But I wasn't surprised. And, you know, isn't it just awful that I wasn't surprised by what she said? And you know, the junior minister was very clear. You know, she said, look, women my age, and I'm a little bit younger than her, but I'm not much younger than her. But that is the experience of every woman, and not of every woman, but of a lot of women. And when it's something that is, and I made a contribution to that debate myself, you know, when it's something like you're sitting on a bus and there's a guy sitting behind you and he takes it upon himself to rub your hair, that's an invasion of my privacy. But that happened to me when I was a younger woman, and indeed much worse than that. But I just got off the bus, you know. I just thought, oh geez, that's awful, and I got off the bus and I didn't talk about it. I just thought, oh, that's a bit gross. But actually, you know, I see in the younger generations, in you know, people my daughter's age, much less tolerance for that sort of mess, and they're much more able to you know, and I'm no shrinking violet, but still I see younger women are much more able to turn around and go, this is my personal space, back it up, you know. And I think that's a good thing. But no, I hesitate to use the word a welcome intervention because but actually it got people talking, which I think is very, very important. And you know, when women share their experiences and when we realise that there's an awful lot that unites us rather than divides us, I think that's always a good thing.
Tell me something about that, starting a conversation, because Nolene Blackwell of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre was speaking on Morning Ireland just after that, and she said, we can introduce all of the laws we want in the legislature, but probably the most potent thing is if people are talking mm-hmm. about it to such an extent that what Josepha Madigan said wouldn't actually be reported in Morning Ireland because we're talking about it all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's an important step to tackling it, because, you know, that has to be the next. It's not simply a case of, you know, we'll all share our stories and, you know, and that'll be the end of it. We'll discuss it. There has to be action to tackle this. And it has to be the stage that not just women, we need men to be our allies. We need people to be our allies in this as well, so that, you know, it's not just an issue that women have or that women talk about to other women. It has to be a mainstream conversation, and only then will we get to the level of intolerance of sexual assault of whatever type, that because we, you know, we'll be open, we'll be honest, we'll be frank, but it's not just women talking to women, it yeah. has to be people talking to people.
Well, just one final question on that, Louise Riley of Sinn Féin. You mentioned that your daughter's generation were far more likely to stand up for themselves, but they too also have unique difficulties, and the whole digital world, which they have to confront and engage in every day, can be particularly sexist, can be particularly nasty, with so much pervasive pornography infiltrating particularly young kids, young men.
Absolutely. And, you know, that's a different dimension. As I say, when Junior Minister Madigan was speaking about her own experience, it was from some time ago. It was not from, as I understand it, from what we might call the digital age. That's another element of it. But the level of tolerance has to be absolutely on the floor. We can't tolerate abuse, be it online, be it in person. It simply cannot be allowed to happen. And I think, you know, recently we had statements in the Dáil, which is good. But again, you know, it has to go beyond that. And I agree with Nolan Blackwell. We have to get to the stage where it's not simply one group talking about this or one gender talking about this, but it has to be a conversation that we are all having. And that's not to normalise it, but actually to normalise the absolute rock solid intolerance of that sort of behaviour, and to give people the confidence to stand up and call it out.
Louise O'Reilly of Sinn Féin. Listen, thank you very much for joining us on the Your Politics podcast today. It's been a pleasure having you.
Thank you.
Micheál Lehane, moving on, that was a particularly substantial issue. We also had the question of certs and all the rest of it. Housing also came back again. We had a big vote on Wednesday night in relation to these cuckoo funds, depending on where you come in the country. But nonetheless, it was that huge issue, a sense that the government is not providing for the people, it's facilitating international money companies to make more money.
Yeah.
Is that unfair?
Well, I think the point the government was trying to make is that they intend to change those policies.
Transitioning.
They can't turn the tap off straight away, or else 2,400 social homes this year wouldn't be made available. They are homes that are going to be leased back from these funds. But of course, the funds then exempt from that increase in stamp duty as a result. And government saying too that this was flagged a few weeks ago, but no one seems to have spotted or heard that. And it is
a small flag.
It's an extraordinary thing, but given the controversy and the heat of the time, I think if it was made in any way clear, it would have been spotted and seized upon and debated, because the entire focus at that point was around the fact that these funds were buying up apartments in bulk, and the government forced to move on that as a result. But again, it shows the kind of challenges, and then it shows the importance of that new document that's fairly close now, it seems, that Housing for All publication that will set out the government's plans in this area, and probably put figures on it too as the exact targets and the amount of funding that will be required. And there is that view, and you saw it as well in relation to the National Maternity Hospital, this desire, and that's all it is at the moment, by the state to own the things that they're leasing. That seems to be a policy position now, but achieving it and how it's going to be achieved, well, that's something that has to be set out, and the opposition will definitely keep the focus on that.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that on the one hand, the government was pointing to things like the land development, you know, they've got that coming, the climate change, they've got that coming, marine planning, they've got that coming, so that there's a huge swathe of legislation and policy which is being going through the Houses of the Rock, this, and that's sort of the long-term stuff. But when Micheál Martin was in the Dáil, he was dealing very much on the here and now. He was talking about the 2,400 families who this year need a home because of the long waiting lists, and that while, you know, homelessness for families has gone down by 48%, it could go up, and this is the need. So to try and anchor some of the decisions that they're making right now in today's world, rather than relying on a legislative change, which could have effect in 3, 4, 5 years.
Yeah, and I suppose it was interesting too when he spoke a few weeks back about the Maynooth purchase of those homes at that point. I mean, he said, let the message go out clear that they shouldn't be leased back, local authorities shouldn't be involved in leasing it back. And yet we see that the number of leased homes this year will be up on next year. Now, the benefit to that is significant, I suppose, for the many people that are on housing lists and waiting for homes, that they will have a home as a result of this. But at the same time, when it comes to policy and when it comes to the message the government is sending out, it seems they can't, it's going to take time for them to do that and to achieve that.
Yeah, I mean, like when you speak to Fine Gael members in either the Seanad or the Oireachtas, they continually say, well, if you look at Sinn Féin, an awful lot of their policies relate to leasing. It isn't as if they're reverse to leasing. They too see the short-term problems and there isn't any quick fix. You can't just lash up a load of houses. We don't have the capacity to deliver them anyway. We don't have the professionals to deliver them in the numbers that we want.
Yeah, and then set back further as a result of COVID and delays to construction and this feeling that, yes, in the future, the state will be more engaged in the direct building of homes. But that's going to take time. But I mean, there still is a difficulty that the state is going to exempt an investment fund from that increase in stamp duty and then take out a 25-year lease and then perhaps at the end of it not even own that. It does address the short-term difficulties and problems, but in the sense of what the government is trying to achieve, what they say they're trying to do, well, it doesn't look great.
No, it doesn't look good. I mean, even Catherine Murphy was alluding to it in the Dáil, where she was saying not only would you lease it for 25 years, but then you'd have to doll the house up before you handed it back to them.
She also described the current arrangement as the equivalent to government bonds on steroids as an incentive.
That's a good line. She's had a few. Anything else that sort of caught your fancy this week?
No, I think housing is going to remain in focus and then you'll see the larger schemes in the next while around the National Development Plan as well, probably before the end of this political term. That's kind of where the focus is. And then underpinning it all and just maybe how grim things might be from a financial point of view will be that summer economic statement, because that is going to have to put some figure on the projected debt and the cost of the pandemic. That's probably going to be a significant moment.
Last time on the podcast, we asked you to speak on behalf of the nation, to look into your heart and decide what the Irish people wanted. Today, I think we'll put you on the spot and decide that you're now Taoiseach of the country. And if you were going to be making a decision on the summer statement, but also the National Development Plan, how would you introduce them from which one do you do first over the next 2 or 3 weeks before they go? I mean, maybe some people are saying maybe do the National Development Plan as the very last thing you do.
Oh, yeah, because I mean, the National Development Plan is full of aspiration and dreams.
We like them.
Absolutely.
Let's put on a video.
This is where we're going to build all these trains. And while it's viewed as important, of course it's important, it's the National Development Plan, it is aspirational. A lot of it may not come to pass. So as a result, there's a greater flexibility. This economic statement will be more stringent and will be more real to many people. I think before that, you'd probably see the housing, the key priority of the government, even if some have contested that slightly at parliamentary party meetings, it seems. But it does, that probably will go first, that document. And then you'd expect the summer economic statement, maybe at the same time or just after it.
Yeah. And then as we look through the summer, we talk about the Dáil rising, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be quiet. If you think back to August of last year, indeed, things were rather busy from a political front.
Yeah, golfing. People went golfing, didn't they?
They did.
I think this time what you will see is you should see indoor hospitality probably sorted by Tuesday with a date put on it. Mm-hmm. And then you'll have those big policy announcements around summer economic statements and the like. And then I think immediately the focus goes to schools and universities and third level institutions generally. And there was a hint of that today at the Oireachtas Education Committee, where already things are being flagged up. Yes, there was a degree of optimism about people being able to return to campus in the autumn, but still calls for a greater focus on things like ventilation, that needs greater attention. So that question is going to begin to be asked. And if, as seems more likely and inevitable, that those COVID cases will be rising, the question will grow louder and louder through late July into August. Can the schools return? What requirements and what new requirements may be necessary?
It's not possible, is it, for the schools and colleges not to return? I mean, that's been something the government has been promising as a high priority, if not a super duper high priority.
Yeah, it would seem so, wouldn't it? I mean, it would seem so. But does it all ultimately come back to that question of how many people are vaccinated at that point? Well, all the adults, but then do you get down into that younger group, particularly for secondary school students? And what is the link between cases and hospitalizations at that point at the end of August?
There's loads to look forward to after our summer holiday, so.
That's it.
Listen, we'll wrap up this edition of Your Politics podcast from RTE News. I'd like to thank our political guest, Louise O'Reilly of Sinn Féin, as well as Micheál Lehane, RTE's political correspondent. Please do subscribe to the podcast. Please do leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. But until next week, take care.